Hey, gang. Happy day after Thanksgiving, I think. You know, every day I wake up and I ask myself, where are we going? And what are we doing in this handbasket? And why are all these Japanese people tailgating us? I ask myself that every morning. And then I'm thankful for RBN, which allows me to do this, these unscripted, impromptu, sometimes, well, no, they're almost always unscripted, unscripted, impromptu chats with, for no apparent reason. And that's why I chill every day, go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. Okay, so I'm on a quest right now to get some batteries so that my voice recorder that I'm using for this, that my voice recorder, if it runs out of batteries, I'll be able to continue on. I don't know if it has enough for a whole show. So I ask myself, where are we going? And, you know, I'm often around people, even people that I'm often around. And sometimes they'll ask these questions. For instance, they might ask, why is everybody in this restaurant Mexican? And, you know, I'll look at them without saying anything. What do you think? What do you think? Because of Jews. That's why. It gets repetitive sometimes. But, you know, and the thing is, people who I've known for a long time, maybe they get tired of the same old story. But it is. And then, you know, you look around, and if you're looking at any isolated thing, you say, oh, okay, whatever, Alejandro Mayorkas, yeah, whatever. If you're looking at that in isolation, or you look at the Ukraine war in isolation, oh, okay, Victoria Nuland, whatever, she's just one person. You look at, you know, the gayness. And, okay, yeah, Hollywood really ramming it down our throats. Yeah, okay, whatever. Or Black Lives Matter. Okay, Susan Rosenberg and George Soros and all. Oh, okay, whatever. But, you know, there is a pattern. And we do have to engage in pattern recognition. And so, you know, more and more people, and people are, at least they're identifying problems more and more, even if they're not. Even if they're not able to do the whole cause and effect thing, they're able to identify patterns. Not patterns, problems. They're identifying problems. They're not identifying patterns. And I don't know. I was in a room where I was overhearing. I was overhearing something. I was doing some other work. But I'm overhearing a podcast or a newscast or something. And I keep hearing the terms globalist and, what was it, globalist and anti-globalist. It's like, okay, globalist. Or, you know, you hear neocon, and it's as if people are just motivated by ideology. It's like we live in some sort of Ben Shapiro world where, you know, race doesn't matter, ideology matters. Well, really? And, I mean, in the case of your race, is there no ideology? So, yeah, people just choose to become neocon because of some sort of ideological conviction. They just choose to, or, you know, the thing is, you just can't explain things with ideology. When, and I don't mean to keep moaning and bitching and harping on about Jewish power, except that it explains so much. It explains so much. If you accept the premise, and there's lots of reasons why you would, because there's lots of backing for this, lots of evidence, that Jews are a group that is, you could say, highly ethnocentric. It's certainly more ethnocentric, more cohesive, more coherent than other ethnic groups. Or if you want to qualify with most others, you can say that, whatever. It's certainly high on the ethnocentrism scale. And I would add, rather high on the kind of a paranoia scale. They do have a persecution complex. And whether you want to say, well, they've got good reason for it because of the Holocaust and pogroms and anti-Semitism, you can say whatever you want as to why, but you can't deny it, that they've got a persecution complex. And of which, so we'll just leave whether or not it's justified, but they do have a persecution complex. They do have a very, they have a high level of ethnocentrism. They, as a group, tend to strongly self-identify. It doesn't matter if you can pick a person, an individual, and say, well, he doesn't. That doesn't matter. We're talking about groups. We're talking about group behavior. We're talking about group tendencies, okay? It doesn't matter that Webster from that TV show in the 1980s wouldn't be a good basketball player. It doesn't mean that blacks can't be good basketball players, okay? Just because Yao Ming was the tallest person in the NBA doesn't mean that Chinamen are taller than everyone else. It doesn't, okay? So we have to... We're looking at groups, tendencies, group behavior. So we're looking at the group level. They do have a persecution complex, which I would say indicates a level of paranoia. So they fear others, and they're cohesive. They're highly they're highly organized, but even to the extent they're not organized, they act in concert. Even if it's not in coordination, they tend to act in concert. They tend to act and think in similar ways. And I'd say the top priority is they tend to think in terms of group interest. That doesn't mean they all do. It doesn't matter if they all do or they all don't. It doesn't matter if Webster was tall or short or was good at basketball or not. Blacks tend to be better at basketball. And Jews, they do tend to think in terms of their group interests. They certainly do a lot more than white people, and which is their main competitor here in the United States. This is basic. So if you've got these few premises, that they are... they tend to strongly self-identify. They tend to be ethnocentric. They tend to be somewhat paranoid. They have persecution complex. They tend to feel that they're at risk, right? From the paranoid. What else do we... They tend to be organized. They tend to think in terms of their self-interest. From that, then it's very easy to explain all of these phenomena that we see. That... The wars, okay? The war in Ukraine is a war against... it's a war to overthrow Vladimir Putin, because Vladimir Putin crossed them. He came to power with the backing of Jewish oligarchs, and instead of preserving their political and economic position in Russia, he betrayed them. You can't allow betrayal. Betrayal is worse than somebody who is an enemy all along, right? Don't we execute traitors? Was Benedict Arnold executed? I don't remember. But we deal with traitors. He was a traitor to them. You look at what's going on in Gaza, and they've got this paranoia complex. They've got this... They want to... Well, that's easy. I mean, that's a slam dunk. This is Jewish behavior, Jewish paranoia. They cannot allow a single threat anywhere near them. They have to completely dominate. They don't trust They don't trust. They need to have complete domination. This is another thing that flows from this, is they are unable to trust anyone else. So they have to thoroughly dominate. And so they dominate society. And they're rather ruthless in doing so. All right, thank you very much. Okay, mission accomplished. I went and got some batteries. And the proprietor was somebody of South Asian extraction. Oh, okay. And then I'm just walking past and I see you got some Central Americans on the roof of this establishment. And so you ask yourself, okay, why are our convenience stores, I guess actually that might have been a, yeah, I guess that's a convenience store that sells beer. Convenience stores run by Pakistanis or South Asians. Why are Central Americans on the roof? Well, because this flows from everything that I've been saying. If you've got Jews who are in control, and we can demonstrate, well, the domination. Control is such a word. People will say, oh, well, you know, they don't do this, they don't do that, so it's not control. Okay, whatever. Domination. If Jews dominate our government, they dominate our society, they're able to usually impose their policy preferences on us. It does flow that they would have a policy preference to mass immigration of people who are different from their main competitors being whites. You know, you could talk about whites now. Maybe in the 1800s, it mattered if you were Irish or Slovenian or German or Greek or whatever. It really doesn't matter, because there was this period in the 20th century between the Johnson Immigration Act of 1924 and then the 1965 Immigration Act, where we had very little immigration, and the whites, who maybe in the early 20th century were not particularly cohesive, they did meld into a rather cohesive unit, whites, where it didn't matter whether you were Greek or Irish or German or Scottish or English or Italian. Really didn't matter that much. Mainly you were white in most parts of the country. Maybe in some neighborhoods in Hoboken or Boston or Chicago, maybe it mattered a little bit. But at any rate, it does flow that if you're in a situation where Jews have got domination over society and they are in competition with the majority white population, that they would want to water down the that white share of the population into a minority, and into a and not just a minority, but a rather small and besieged minority, which is exactly what they're doing. And you do that through mass immigration of people who are not going to identify as white, in fact, who can be taught to identify to view whites with hostility. Okay, I'm going to take a little break. Oh no, wait! Well, I'm just going to finish this section up. So you would have mass immigration. You would have Pakistani-run convenience stores and Honduran roofers and whatever else. You would water down the population. You would also want to decrease the white birth rate. And, you know, if you look at the second, what is it, the UN Convention on Genocide, and you look at what constitutes genocide, there's a few things that constitute genocide, but in interfering with the, inhibiting the reproduction of a group is one of these factors, one of these things that it can be considered genocide. I don't care whether we call it genocide or not, honestly, but I'm just saying that this is a strategy. If you're in competition with a group, you want to interfere with their birth rate. And homosexuality, especially, you can say, well, yeah, but other groups, I saw a Mexican homosexual, I saw a black homosexual, and I did. I've seen them before. I've seen them recently. But with whites in particular, where you've got a society that is, where your status in society, your position in society, your opportunities in society are determined by your victimhood status. And whites are the oppressor. Well, then for white people to gain any kind of victimhood status, they've got to become some sort of sexual minority. And this interferes with reproduction. This is explained. And then, so you see the motivation for it, the Jewish motivation for it. And then you can see the Jewish actors involved in it. Joe Solomonese, look him up. In the whole run-up to gay marriage, he was the head of the Human Rights Campaign. And you look at the role of John Stewart. You look at the role of, just listen to Joe Biden as vice president thanking a Jewish group for everything they did to make gay marriage a reality. It wouldn't have happened without them. He thanked them. You can see that. So, with the wars, with the immigration, with the gayness, and with the hostility towards whites, there was captured on video about a week or two ago, 14 black kids. There might have been a non-black involved, but mostly black kids in Las Vegas at a school. They stomped a white kid to death. What was the white kid's crime? The white kid had intervened in their bullying against another white kid, and so they stomped this kid to death. Now, four of them have been charged with murder, but that's not the thing. The thing is, most people have never heard of it. And this is egregious. It's egregious, but this type of thing happens all the time. The stomping happens all the time, not necessarily stomping to death, but we did have a case very recently. Earlier this year, at some school that LeBron James was associated with in Akron, Ohio, where a white kid was beaten to death. A white 17-year-old was beaten to death by some blacks at a basketball court. But this, what happened in Las Vegas, is so egregious. And it's not going to be a college celebrity. You're not going to hear. It's not going to be reported on national news. You'll hear it if you're on the internet and you're connected to the right sources. You'll hear it. But most people are never going to hear about it. As opposed to George Floyd, who was a criminal. A petty criminal, but a criminal who was resisting arrest and had a heart attack, a drug overdose induced heart attack that the police were unable to save him from, and it became the cause for massive riots, anti-white riots, anti-white hate, billions of dollars going to this anti-white terrorist group. That was Israeli, a Jewish organized group with black frontmen, the BLM. So everywhere you look, you see it, and globalists don't explain it, and the New World Order doesn't explain it. None of this stuff explains it. People can't even identify what the New World Order is, where it is, who's in it. Because the thing is, when you hear myself, when you hear Dr. Duke, we are naming names. We're saying we name names, and it does. And another thing, and this is what I've been pushing more than anyone else, is that it's decentralized. It's not as if George Soros just gives orders and everybody follows him. It's decentralized because Jews as a group are decentralized, and maybe that's their history, but it's certainly I'd say it's their history. But whether it's their history or not, it is their actuality. They're decentralized. Okay, I'm going to, I've got my batteries, and we're at the 20-minute mark. I'll be right back.
Charles de Gaulle once said, actually, it's difficult to envision in this regard any other criterion, any other standard than gold. Yes, gold, which does not change in nature, which can be made into either bars, ingots, or coins, which has no nationality, and which is considered in all places and all times the immutable and fiduciary value par excellence. So when the question is, why gold? It's simple, my friends. The answer to that question is simply, why not? Like it or not, precious metals will always be the world's reserve currency. Even though nations do not define their currency by their worth in, say, gold, individuals still buy gold and silver to protect themselves from inflation. The more money a nation's central bank pours into the economy, the less valuable its currency, the dollar is, which means the price of everything else rises. $21 up for a bag of dog food. Seeing that the dollar is cheap, that's why the cost of everything goes up. It's because the buying power, the value of the dollar has tanked. It's worth nothing. And the gold that your family would have owned in 1907 will buy at least the same amount of goods, if not far more. William McPhee once stated, it's extraordinary how many emotional storms one may weather in safety if one is ballasted with ever so little gold. The truth about money, gold versus cash in a crisis, gold, a valuable thing to store, the power of gold in times of crisis. Historical sketch of paper currency. Oh, and beware the ides of rare coin dealers. And Alan Greenspan's speech on gold and economic freedom. How interesting. I'm going to give you gold and silver in 5 easy lessons. Seeking out the most efficient and most secure route to owning gold and converting it into widely accepted currency is the next best thing to enjoying gold-backed currency, my friends. In a world of central bankers hell-bent on devaluing our savings, you need to own private gold standard. Contact me, Jeffrey Bennett at Kettle Moraine Limited, by calling our phone number at 602-799-8214. That's 602-799-8214.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Black Owl Coffee, and I started Black Owl because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
And, you know, I went into that convenience store, and I'd paused the recorder while I was in the convenience store, and then towards the end of the transaction, I thought, you know, I should have just recorded this. Why not? Maybe I should just do entire programs, Boomer Visions, where it's not even Boomer Visions, it's Boomer. Boomer voyages, Boomer adventures, where instead of just being on a dog walk, I'm walking around town interacting with people. Maybe that would be a thing. Probably want to edit it down some. But so right now I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I've never been here before. I was in Kenosha. Was that last year or the year before? I've been in Kenosha a couple times. But when I was in Kenosha a year or two ago, I talked to a guy whose pawn shop, it wasn't a pawn shop, it was an antique store. The antique store had suffered very considerable losses in the riots, but, you know, other stores just got completely burned down. His didn't get burned down, but it I guess the front glass got broken and there was some looting and whatnot. But other places got burned down, and I remember him... I said something about, the only thing that has stopped these black riots from just going into regular people's houses is not knowing which houses had the guns and which didn't. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, and he pointed out the window and says, see these businesses that are still here and the ones that were burned down? The blacks knew which ones had, they knew which ones had the gun. It wasn't that they didn't know, it's they knew. Because the people with guns were standing on in front of their properties with guns or standing on their roof with guns. That was in the context of the Kyle Rittenhouse. And so if you weren't standing in this neighborhood where I was talking to the guy at the antique store, if you were not standing on your roof or visibly, if you were not there armed protecting your property, it got burned down on that block. And on many other blocks, as you know, I drove around and there were a lot of vacant lots, inexplicably vacant lots. Anyway, so I've been in Kenosha. I've never been in Milwaukee. So I'm walking around trying to get a battery so I can make sure I can finish this recording. You know, you want to finish what you start. And there's an awful lot of Mexicans. I went to a place yesterday. I wound up getting some pizza, and that wasn't a Mexican-owned shop, but everything around there was Mexican restaurants. So I don't know. Chicago is about 30% Hispanic, mostly Mexican. I guess they've been there for a while. I don't know when all the Mexicans... I mean, when I think of Chicago, I think of Polish, right? You know, and Irish and German and whatnot. A lot of ethnic, you know, along with, say, Boston and maybe old New York, Cleveland. You think of these Rust Belt cities that absorbed all of these Ellis Island era immigrants. And, so Chicago, I always think of Polish, but the huge Mexican population there. Why? I don't know. And I don't know how recent it is. Now, I just bent over. I saw a penny on the ground, and I just picked up a penny off the ground in this parking lot, and it's a copper penny. You know, a lot of the pennies since 1982 have not been copper. They have a copper coating on the exterior, but they're actually zinc. Did you know that they went from copper pennies to zinc in 1982? So if you have anything from 1983 on, it's zinc. And if you have anything from 1981 prior to that, it's copper. And 1982, it can be either. They switched in the middle of the year. So we have zinc pennies, but this is a copper penny. And it's got a little bit of green corrosion on the backside from 1963. And I'm looking at this penny. This penny's a boomer. This penny was born in... The boomers are up till, I believe, 1964 is what demographers usually use as the last year for the boomers, the baby boom. So this is a boomer penny. And think, when this was minted, you didn't have the 1965 Immigration Act. The 1960 census, the most recent census, had the country as population of 180 million, including 160 million whites and 18 million blacks, and then, you know, 1 or 2 million other, which would be American Indian, it would be Chinese and Japanese and whatever else was around. So you're talking about less, probably 1% or so other. About 87% white, 88% white, 11% black, and 1% other, roughly along those lines. Very different era back then. Okay, with that little bit of nostalgia, I'll be right back.
True.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Long-Term Food Storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Okay, gang, so with that, here I am. I'm back, and I'm standing in a parking lot in Milwaukee with a penny that I picked up off the ground from 1963. So, you know, this is something that you can do, something I've done many times, is if you have a Fresnel lens, you can order these Fresnel lenses. They're what they used to use in overhead projectors, but you can get a Fresnel lens on the internet for about $5 or so. 1 foot by 1 foot square. A Fresnel lens is a lens, but it's a bunch of like circular lens segments. So it can be flat. So it's flat, but it's almost grooved like a record, right? And so it's every circular. So it's a circle within circles within circles, and each one has. You know, it's got lens curve, right? It's got a curvature to it, so it will focus light. It'll focus light, but it's flat, and they're made nowadays out of plastic, and they're floppy. But you can get one through regular U.S. mail for about $5, and if you have a 1 foot by 1 foot lens, now in November, you could probably do it in November at noon. But if you can get like a square foot of sunlight. And then you concentrate it into a penny-sized object, right? So you get the penny-sized image of the sun that's being concentrated by a Fresnel lens, a one-foot square Fresnel lens. If you have a penny that is after 1960, after 1982, made out of zinc, it will melt because zinc has a melting temperature that is, what is it? It's about 700 degrees Fahrenheit, and you're able to get those temperatures by concentrating 1 foot, 1 square foot of sunlight down to about 1 square inch or so, a couple square inches of sunlight. You can achieve those temperatures and melt the zinc penny. But of course, it's got a copper coating alongside it. And so what happens is all of a sudden the zinc in the interior of the penny melts. But the copper coating, copper has a much higher melting temperature. It's like what, like 1800 degrees or something? So the copper becomes a film, like a foil. So it's as if you've got, have you ever had a Hershey's Kiss? Because Hershey's Kiss is wrapped in aluminum foil, right? Some sort of foil. And it melts. So, you know, on a hot day, it melts. So you've got this molten chocolate inside foil. Well, that's what the zinc penny becomes. Now, if you were to take an aluminum coin, not a zinc coin, but an aluminum coin, like a 1 yen or one yuan, or in the old days, an Italian lira was aluminum, but it was kind of a large coin back in the old days. But anyway, you take an aluminum coin, you put it on the ground. Aluminum's temperature, melting temperature, is like 850 as opposed to 700. So it's higher. So you melt your, and I've done this. I've done it many times because that's how I roll. And so you melt the penny, which is technically illegal. It's destroying U.S. Because your money, the value of your money is yours, but the actual coinage belongs to the federal government or something. So you're technically not allowed to do this. And the same with putting a penny on a railroad track in order to smush it. And also the smushing machines, those are technically illegal too, but whatever. So anyway, you melt the penny first, and the zinc melts, and then you melt. Then you concentrate the sunlight onto the aluminum, and it doesn't melt because it doesn't quite get that high. But then you start poking at the aluminum, and you can bend it. Why are you able to bend it? Well, it's not melting. Well, no, it's not melting. But at different temperatures, the tensile strength and the various properties of the metal change. So the tensile strength has changed. So you are able to, if you had pliers, you could just bend it. If you have like a rock and to prop it up against, if it's propped up against a little rock and then you poke it with a stick, you can bend it, but it's not melted, but it bends. And this is why, if you've ever been to, say, Jamestown or Williamsburg on a field trip when you were a kid, and you went to the blacksmiths, and they heat up a rod of iron, and when it gets red hot, it's not melting, but when it's very, very hot, then you hit it with a hammer, and it'll bend. Why do you heat it up? Can't you just hit it with a hammer? Well, it bends a lot easier when it's heated up with a hammer. So why do I say this? I say this because I'm so sick of, and this is completely off topic for today, but I'm so sick of people saying that jet fuel won't melt steel. Jet fuel doesn't burn high enough to melt steel, and therefore 9/11 didn't happen or whatever. The 9/11 was an inside job. Maybe 9/11 was an inside job, but the jet fuel temperature and the temperature of jet fuel burning and the melting point of steel, anybody who's referencing them is showing that they don't know what the hell, that they haven't thought this through. And I know some people who are engineers, some people who have backgrounds are saying this. But of course, what you have to consider is if you got an engineer, he's not considering, like when he's considering how much steel is needed to support the weight of the building, he's not considering how much steel is required at 1500 degrees Fahrenheit. He's thinking about at room temperature or at normal temperatures that we experience on the surface of the earth. So anyway, I'm just bringing that up. I'm going to pause for a second and recalibrate my brain. I'll be right back. Okay, but speaking of 9/11, I am right back. Speaking of 9/11, I had lunch a few months ago with Ryan Dawson in Seoul, just around the corner from the Lotte department store in downtown Seoul, in Myeongdong, if you've been there. And Ryan Dawson has made a documentary of 9/11. I can't say I've seen the whole thing because it's long. He's got a lot in there, but I've seen or at least listened to the bulk of it. And I think he's a serious person. Maybe he's not an engineer, but he's a serious person. And the one of the things that he finds so objectionable is that the events of 9/11 and the significance of 9/11, the impact of 9/11, has been so overshadowed by all these weird conspiracy ideas about holograms and other things. And it's really taken the focus off of the impact of 9/11. And so really, whether this, when you get down to it, and I'm not going to say I'm speaking for Ryan Dawson at this point, but when you get down to it, the importance of 9/11 isn't whether or not it was an inside job, or, you know, because it could be an inside job, or it could be a Rahm Emanuel, never let a perfectly good crisis go to waste. It could be either one, and when you get down to it, that doesn't matter that much. It shouldn't matter that much. I'll say why it matters to a lot of people that much, but it shouldn't matter that much. What matters is what was done with it. It was used as a justification for launching a series of wars, right? Starting with Afghanistan. And I've gone back and I recently reread an article I wrote September 13th, 2001, 2 days afterwards, saying we should not go on war footing. Well, you know, within a few days, Congress had voted unanimously, with one exception, Barbara Lee, who's still in Congress, I think she's still in Congress, a black lady from who represents Berkeley in California. But everyone else, Dennis Kucinich, Ron Paul, everybody else voted for the war in Afghanistan. They all did. But me and Barbara Lee, we were opposed to this. And then, of course, the big Iraq war, their Iraq invasion, and it goes on and on. A lot of this stuff has been based on 9/11. Certainly those two, very, very directly based on 9/11. But the whole war on terror thing, that Libya and Syria, that they and Yemen, that they came out of this war on terrorism. Also, the attacks on our civil liberties were based on 9/11, keeping us safe. So gone are the days where you could walk, where if you were expecting your wife or your father or your son or whatever at the airport, where you could just wait in the waiting lounge where the arrivals, where you used to be able to. This 20 years ago, 23 years ago, you could just walk up to, you could go with your family members to where they actually get on the car or get on the plane. You just wait right there. What's that room called? Anyway, I'll be right back. Okay, well, anyway, getting back to my theme, I'm walking along the shores of Lake Michigan. Getting back to the theme, so you can explain what's going on in America with Jewish power. I get sick of hearing myself talking about it all the time, but somebody's got to do it. You can do it with Jewish power. You can't do it with globalism or neocon. Just people adopting an ideology and then sticking with it and willing. No, it doesn't work like that. It's these people. They see themselves as riding a tiger, and as long as you're riding the tiger, you're safe. But once you fall off the tiger, then you're going to get eaten. That's the way they see themselves. So they have to be in control. They have to be in domination. They have to dominate. Because if they let go, the bulk of them, the critical mass of them, feel that if they lose control of society, they will be holocausted. This whole, one of the impacts of the Holocaust narrative, it's not just white guilt. It's not just that it feeds into a white guilt and makes us easy to manipulate, but it feeds into Jewish paranoia. Just as much as it feeds into white guilt, it feeds into Jewish paranoia and makes them ruthless. It makes them feel that they have to maintain control or else. So it's really very dangerous, and it impacts them as much as it impacts us. It makes them ruthless. It makes it makes them paranoid. Makes us guilty, and therefore we become compliant and they become ruthless. And this is from the Holocaust, and they. I don't go a whole lot into the Holocaust. A lot of other people, even people here on RBN, go into it a lot more. I know William Repelum, he goes into it a lot more than I do. And I haven't made even that much of a study of it. But whatever. But that's a fact. I'm not talking about the impact. I'm talking about the impact of it. There was a lot of Jews died in Europe and in World War II era. A lot of people died. A lot of Jews were in internment camps. Things were rough all over. How many people died? I don't know. That's not even the point. That's not even the point with me. Although it's absolutely worthy of historic inquiry. That's just not my job. But at any rate, so there's this ruthlessness. You know, I hope we're not getting a whole lot of weird wind sounds. I am walking along the waterfront. So they've been in this dominant position for decades. I think that 7-8 years ago, there was a kind of a critical juncture 7 or 8 years ago with Donald Trump and Brexit. I throw Brexit in there too. They had just gotten gay marriage. All of the, the demographic projections showed that whites would be a minority in like 2037. And things were gradually going exactly where they wanted it to go. And I do think that there was kind of two tendencies within the Jewish elite. One was, and the dominant one, was to just ride it out. And then the other one was always to push harder. I do think there's been kind of a two strains of thought. One is to push hard, fast, and the other is to take our time. And I think, this is something it's not necessarily confined to Jews, but if you look at the Soviet Politburo in the 1920s, this was the big issue. Everybody thought they were going to be invaded sooner or later by European powers or outside powers, anti-Bolshevik, anti-communist powers. The question was when. And the Trotskyites thought soon. And the Bukharinites thought later. The Bukharin people and Stalin initially sided with them. The idea was, well, it's not going to happen for a while, and so in the meantime, we'll develop agriculture, and then after we develop agriculture, that's going to provide a base for developing industry. We develop industry, and we have enough time where we can reindustrialize. But we're going to develop agriculture, and the Trotskyites were like, no, we've got to plunder agriculture. We've got to plunder agriculture in order to build up industry first. And that's what led to the famine. That's what led to the mass collectivization of agriculture. That's what led to the Holodomor, was they thought the invasion was going to come sooner. So I'm just throwing that. I don't want to get too deep into those weeds, but that was the thought. And so I think in 2016, with 2015, 2016, with the rise of Donald Trump and him bringing up issues that had not been discussed. Nobody was talking seriously about immigration. Immigration wasn't a big issue, and he made immigration into a big issue. Whether he wound up doing anything about it or not, whether he even thought about really doing anything about it or not, it happened. Immigration all of a sudden became way up on the agenda in a way it never had been. And I think this freaked out enough of the Jewish elite that the balance of power switched from the go slow people to the go fast people. And I think this was a big deal. And so you got this acceleration, where they're opening the borders like never before, and where they were using means of a stymieing President Trump, of stripping away the powers of a president like never before. These are unprecedented. Maybe you could go back to Andrew Johnson or something, make a case for that, but certainly unprecedented in our lifetime. And I think that's very significant. Okay, I'm going to be back to wrap up in just a little bit.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new Ease-Off Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The Ease-Off lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the Ease-Off? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Okay, let's finish this up. Welcome back, by the way. Let's wrap this up. So, and I don't like to be too repetitive, but I think sometimes we're trying to wrap our minds around things, and you got to go over it and try to wrap it this way, try to wrap it that way. So I just as I said, 2015, 2016 was a critical juncture where the double or nothing people, you know, if you looked at the go slow people and then the go fast people, well, the accelerationists, the go fast people got their way in 2015, 2016. By the way, I'm walking through Milwaukee. Why are all these like Central Americans just moseying around this park? Why? So many. Where did they come from? Central America is where they came from. Anyway, what's happened, you've had these accelerationists, these go fast, double or nothing policies in place for the past 8 years. And, you know, the thing about double or nothing is maybe you double your money or maybe you go broke. And I think right now what we're seeing is that was a bad gamble for them, and they are going broke. It's gone too far. They lost the Ukraine war. It's over. Right now, it's just, you got Zelensky feuding with Zeluzhny. Zeluzhny's, the general, is saying that it's a stalemate and they can't win. Everything's just falling apart there. Instead of getting the Biden entity was trying to get $60 billion for them, and Lloyd Austin just went over to Kiev with $100 million, $0.1 billion. They wanted $60 billion; he gave them $0.1 billion. Okay, that's done. Stick a fork in it. They lost, and now Israel's just gone way too far. Israel did provoke this; totally provoked it. Obviously, their behavior over the past 8 decades has been thoroughly provocative, but the events, the Hamas military attack on Israel on October 7th was called Al-Aqsa flood. Al-Aqsa, why Al-Aqsa? Because the Jews had a week or two earlier, they had invaded the Al-Aqsa Mosque, Jews, and conducted ceremonies there that, as far as the Muslims were concerned, in the mosque, it desecrated the mosque, and the plans were to destroy the mosque. There are people in the Israeli cabinet who are pushing to destroy the mosque and build a temple imminently. So you had this provocation. Now you've got this war, and the Netanyahu government response to it has been so over the top, so extreme, that it's hard to imagine that Israel, at a minimum, that they're going to be able to maintain the settlements, this with 600,000 to 700,000 people in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. The proposals that are being pushed by the Arab League, by Russia, by China, are all talking about 1967 borders and UN Resolution 232. This is going to happen. They've lost that. They might lose a lot more. The longer this goes on, the more they're going to lose. So, and you've got, in the United States, starting to get a discussion of Jewish power. Now, the problem is the people who are in a position, like people like Elon Musk and Tucker Carlson, they don't understand it very well. They have no practice talking about it. They've benefited from it. So the discussion of Jewish power is not necessarily going to be the most edifying one, but it's a start. And I'm trying to do my best, and I'll continue to try to do my best. And thank you, dear audience. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving and enjoy your weekend. And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Review Radio.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
You're listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.